Welcome to Something We Read. I'm Catherine.
And I'm Eve. We've been reading together our whole lives, and now we want to read with you.
This is our Here first we are. Episode.
It's very exciting. This is not a very long time in the making, but we're happy to be here.
Surprisingly easy to start a podcast.
So everyone says.
Yes.
If you have somehow made your way here without knowing who we are, which seems highly unlikely at this point, or without having listened to the trailer, which we posted last week, I would recommend going over and listening to that. It's just like 5 minutes and explains a little bit about our vision for the show.
What we aim to do here together.
Yeah. So Sparks Notes version of that, we will be reading one book every month and then coming together to talk about it along with other kind of musings and tidbits about things that have been bringing us joy in the past month and other things that we've read.
Mm-hmm. Recommendations.
Yeah. So that is the plan for the show. And I think probably on that note, we'll just dive right into our opening segment. Catherine, tell me about something that sparked joy for you in the past month.
Wow. Exciting. I'm going to do a cop out. I'm going to talk about the little furry friend at my feet. Wesley, my dog, who's named after the main character of The Princess Bride.
As you wish.
As you wish. The really handsome blonde guy who says as you wish. And when I saw my little really handsome blonde guy down here, that's what I had to name him.
Again, it's highly unlikely that anyone listening to this doesn't know who Wesley is.
Whatever. It's a cop-out. He has been bringing me a lot of joy, and I want to tell you why, which is that he's 11 months old now, and he's a really good... He's almost a grown-up, and it means my life is a lot better. For anyone who has a puppy that is between 3 to probably 10 months old, I'm sending you a lot of love and a lot of support. It is as hard as they tell you it is going to be. But now we have a really good routine. He sleeps at my feet if I'm sitting anywhere. He follows me everywhere. He is my constant companion and man's best friend, you know. And so he's been bringing me immense measures of joy lately.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
He brings me joy as well. He's a really special little
guy. He loves his auntie.
I call him Mr. Baby.
Yeah,
so he's Mr. Baby. He's a grown up. He will always be Mr. Baby.
He's Mr. Baby. And let me turn the tables.
Mm.
Let me ask you, what's been sparking joy for you this month, Eve?
I will tell you. I wrote about this actually. Plug.
Oh yes,
for
please.
My Substack, something Eve read. again, likely that anyone listening to this is aware of the existence of something Eve read.
Let's still plug it.
I'm just plugged it. Substack, something Eve read.
It's an exceptional blog.
Catherine is my biggest blog. Fan.
Really, it is.
I wrote about this now, I guess it would be 2 or 3 weeks ago, but since Daylight Savings, when I wake up before work, I have to be at work at 8:30 in the morning. So when I wake up right now, because of the time change, the light that comes into my room at that time is different than it was before. Mm. And there's this really satisfying little square of sunlight that filters in through my curtains on one side of my room to the other side of the room. And I see that every morning when I wake up.
So
and
nice.
It really brings me a lot of joy. I'm a kind of a fanatic for light projected onto a wall.
Yes. Well, you had sort of a... You've had some
I did.
Religious experiences.
I did have a religious experience once with that. Maybe more on that at another time. But
circle back to that.
Yeah. So that would be, for me, just a little thing. First thing in the morning to see that light when I'm waking up.
Really I'm obsessed.
Starts my day off right.
Thank you for sharing that joy spark with us.
Yeah. I think it's all about the little things. Mm. So cliche, but true.
So true.
And I think that brings us around to... Oh, the main event.
What it's all about, really.
Yeah.
What we're here for. All right.
This month we read Zero at the Bone by Christian Wiman. It is 50 entries against despair.
Mm-hmm. Such a cool cover.
It's a really good cover.
That's, you know, they say don't judge a book by its cover.
I always do.
I always do as well. So, judged well by this cover.
Agreed.
Very intrigued.
How would you describe this book?
Let's see. Tricky. A tricky one to describe.
It's an it was an interesting choice for our first
book. I'll tell you what, I felt a lot smarter while I was reading it.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like it was infusing my brain with intelligence.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I like to read at night, and I started trying to read this one at night, and it's one of those you really should read during the daytime.
You just also have to read it, like, with a pen or pencil.
With a pen, you've got to... I mean, not everyone's going to do that, but you want to be paying attention the whole time, and yet some of the subject matter is so complex.
I think we're getting ahead of ourselves. Yeah, so this is a book. It's separated out into 51 entries that kind of go through... I would describe it as what it's like to live life as a human being. Yes. Just the mixture and the balance of joy and... you know, love and all kinds of positive things with despair and grief and pain.
And it's all sort of set against the backdrop of despair, right? Mm-hmm. Like each entry, and he says it's against despair, but really I kind of found it to be pro-despair.
Very pro-despair. In the sense that despair and joy and love, or whatever you want to call the despair opposite of despair,
begets joy.
And joy begets despair.
So true.
So I think the ultimate argument of the book was that the goal should not be to avoid despair or suffering. Avoid pain or avoid suffering, but to learn how to live with that essential element of the human condition, and even to go one step further. And Christian Wyman is religious.
Yes.
He's a professor of theology.
At Yale.
And so from his perspective, like, learning how to thank God for despair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think that sums it up, you know, beautifully.
Yeah. And I would agree with you that it was the experience of reading it, definitely some dense portions.
Right.
Where he will get into different philosophers.
Different sort of religious figures. Different poets,
different religious figures. Certain sections where he's quoting the Bible and kind of going into scripture a bit. But I found I just tried to not get too bogged down with trying to make sure that I was understanding everything super clearly from from an academic type standpoint.
Right.
And more just when I got to a section that I felt was a bit
dense,
I just tried to read on.
Took what you could from it. That's what I did.
And I think
I
still got a lot out of those sections.
I think it was kind of like, it's similar to poetry. Like they say, when you're reading poetry, you shouldn't necessarily try and like understand everything that is being given to you via this poem, more so like the way it makes you feel. In a way, this book is one big poem.
Yeah, and it has a lot of poetry in it as well, which I loved.
Me too.
I thought some of the poems that he included that were written by other people were really incredible, and that was one of my favorite things was some of the poets that I wasn't familiar with. Like, the one that comes to mind for me was William Bronk. I don't know if you remember that section. I really loved
that was some of his
poetry, and I also liked Christian Wyman's poetry.
Me too.
Which was scattered throughout.
And that's a good segue. The format of the book I found to be very compelling, not only because one day I would like to write a similar book.
You would write a really good one like this.
But I really like, and it's sort of trending lately, like Maggie Smith's We Can Make This Place Beautiful.
I haven't read that one.
Very good. But basically, essays interspersed with poems. And I also liked how Christian Wyman included... some of the entries were just like pages of quotes.
Yeah,
as
I was
going
to bring that up. I really enjoyed those sections where he kind of would have a central theme, maybe.
Yeah.
Like the maybe salvation that art can provide.
And then
like there would be quotes from all different
quotes
thinkers
about
and
it.
Poets and artists.
Because we're our grandfather, since Eve and I quote every morning.
Yes. Our Jeno. We get an inspirational quote once a day.
I found I liked those quote sections because I have sort of, I love the quotes that we receive.
Yeah, I think collecting quotes is something that I think that's very powerful in terms of like forming a life philosophy, so to speak. And it's something that I don't really do, but that I'd like to do.
Right.
And I think that this book definitely inspired me in that direction too.
Yeah, agreed.
Do you have a favorite part?
I do.
Let's talk about it.
I do. Hold on. Let me crack open my copy. Okay. So, I mean, I underlined so much, but I think that my favorite, really going to be hard for me to choose, but I'm going to choose the one that I think you might not choose. It's entry number 6 called Issues of Blood.
Okay.
And this was the chapter where they speak about their dog. So this is the narrator, and it's kind of biographical, Christian Wyman. He and his wife have a dog who was a rescue. And they got the news that the vet had called, and this dog had been kind of like suffering from health issues. And it turned out before he had been rescued, there had been a bullet lodged in the dog, and it had still, they did an x-ray and they realized it had still been there. And the way he described this dog being in pain and like not showing it was just, I mean, heartbreaking to me. And I can't really even explain, like, I think it really goes to the, you know, cuts to the way that he writes is just like so meaningful and so kind of like gut punch. And it's a short chapter. I think it's just like 4 or 5 pages.
Yeah. Or like that section as well. I thought that you were going to choose this, the one about the sister.
Yes. Well, I thought that you might choose that one.
No, I didn't.
Oh, damn. So should I? No, it's too late. All right. Oh, well.
I mean, we can still talk about it.
Let me briefly touch on that one because this was a real favorite.
It was a longer, one of the longer entries.
It's entry number 28.
He had a fascinating childhood.
Yes.
And his dad was a doctor, like a psychiatrist at a mental institution in, it seems like the middle of nowhere, Texas.
Yeah.
And this entry, what was it?
It's called The White Buffalo.
The White Buffalo, but what number?
Oh, entry number 28.
28 was about his dad and his life growing up there, and in particular, his sister. Yeah. So, do you want to, you can.
Oh. I just thought it was beautifully done. It was written, like, from the point of view of his sister was in active addiction, I believe, when he first wrote the chapter. So, it was very, like, his sister. I felt
frustrated,
maybe. And then he added kind of like a few pages at the end, basically explaining that they had reconciled, and it was kind of this beautiful, and he was able to like look back on his reflections from the past and understand where he was coming from, but also see the flaws in some of his
reasoning. That was really powerful.
And I just thought he wrote beautifully about his family and reflected.
Also write about struggling with addiction himself? I think
see, that's one of the things about this book. It is, like I said, one long poem, so there is some like ambiguity and it's not totally sure. To me it did seem that he himself had struggled with addiction in the past. Yeah. I mean, actually multiple times he referenced that, but
maybe gave it the chapter on his sister prior to kind of the part that he added after she is now recovered and he talks about how she's an amazing aunt to his children. But before that, I think some of the tone of it, which I don't know, I mean, you could speak to this,
right?
But was a sense of maybe frustration that he was able to overcome whatever issues he struggled with. And that there was a level of frustration that she wasn't able to do that for so long.
I think that was definitely in there. That can be hard to watch. I thought both of those like personal stories were really beautifully written.
Yeah.
They were sort of like the nuggets of gold at the end of the rainbow for me of this book.
I think also just in the sense of being like more traditionally narrative.
Right.
And like in terms of his character and the story of his life.
We got to learn a little bit more about him in those instances. There were many others throughout the book, but those two chapters were really I thought really, really good.
Yeah.
And tied a lot of things together for me.
I agree.
So I've taken up my slot, haven't I?
Yeah. Yes.
Your turn.
So I have kind of two that are a little bit more moments versus entire entries, although the entries around them are also, I thought, really good. But the first is very early on.
Mm.
It's actually entry two, and it's called The World Sounds. And it starts out with a poem by Wallace Stevens. I love Wallace Stevens. And so that was kind of like a fun entry so early on in the book. But my favorite part from this section was a little, he kind of leads into it using a Wallace Stevens quote, which is, "Unreal things have a reality of their own in poetry as elsewhere."
Mm.
And then he goes into kind of some musings. And I'm just going to read a quote from this section. "Unreal, a slippery word. It can mean false, used to dismiss a movie with plot holes or a sentimental novel. On the other hand, it can mean truer than we knew was possible. Unreal," the tourist says, staring down at the Grand Canyon. "In the first instance, we are frustrated and balked. An experience has been denied us, even as it has reminded us that we have had such experiences in the past. In the second, we are seized and enlarged. We are also, insofar as any experience of awe comes with a charge to act upon it, and insofar as an increased capacity for contemplation constitutes action, called." So this idea that a moment of awe, or, you know, feeling, experiencing awe, is a call to action, really spoke to me. And I think the sticking point for why it really spoke to me is connected to his definition of a capacity, an increased capacity for contemplation, counting as an action, which I thought was just really interesting. And a really, it just summed up my feelings about having experiences where you're struck by wonder and awe, and feeling like in that moment you accomplish something, even if you don't actually do anything.
Right. I think it's, that's a very really satisfying powerful. Feeling.
And then in relation to kind of writing, which he's a writer and a poet, so he talks about what it means to create through writing. And I really loved this quote, which is just on the next page, that is, "Reality is always in excess of perception, and any work or life that does not acknowledge this excess and this splendid ignorance is not only missing much of reality, but is itself unreal in the worst sense." So kind of striving through writing to acknowledge that there's so much about reality that we can't perceive, that we don't understand, that we don't know.
Right.
So I really loved that.
And I feel like you've written about that idea before of trying to find the right words and not being able to.
Yeah, I think
and
that's...
And it's a true, I think, it's so accurate.
Yeah, it's a powerful idea, and it that really spoke to me. There was one other quick, I know we're going to be running over a little of our maybe initial plan, but there was a quick quote that I wanted to read to you, and I wanted to ask you about this.
Oh.
It's also related to kind of the act of writing and creating. This is a this is from entry 10.
Okay.
It's called "A Prison Gets to Be a Friend." And he says, this is his hypothesis, that's how he frames it, that there are creative writers and there are destructive writers. And by that, he means, by creative, I mean disclosing and furthering reality, equipping human consciousness to grow. And by destructive, I mean waging an assault on the kinds of unconsciousness that falsify, obscure, and deform reality. So he gives examples. Like, I think one of the examples that he gave was that The Wasteland by T.S. Eliot is a destructive poem.
Mm-hmm.
And then something that was, like, I would argue that this book is creative in terms of, you know, further disclosing and furthering reality and making you feel ready to grow. As opposed to kind of tearing something down.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're a creative or a destructive writer?
I think creative.
Yeah.
I think creative.
I would agree. I'm drawn to that as well. I was just curious. Like,
yeah, I like the way he outlines this. I like, you know, I think that that's accurate, that there's those two different types of writers, and some writers can really write and tear down everything you thought you knew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like to comfort people.
Yeah.
And I think my writing does too.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat myself. But I thought the way that he laid it out was so interesting, because I think as a writer, sometimes you compare yourself to other writers when you're reading.
Yeah.
And I think for me, sometimes it feels like an element of my writing that might be missing is that like destructive impulse.
Yeah.
But I like the idea that, no, it's actually okay. You're kind of doing similar work from different angles, even if you are a comforting writer, even if your writing is comforting instead of super challenging.
Yeah. Yeah.
So very true. That spoke to me. And not that one writer couldn't be both in different works, but
formats. I love that. Wow. So
in summary,
how to sum this puppy up?
Hopefully you can tell from our discussion and the things that we called out that it was a really moving and thought-provoking
book. Very thought-provoking.
And I hope we can highlight also enough, like, not to be frightened.
Yes. Yeah. I want to touch on that. Mm-hmm. Like, it is, I meant what I said in the beginning. Like, when you pick up this book and, like, I would carry it around in my bag while I was reading it, like, you feel sort of like you're maybe the most brilliant person on the street because you're holding this book. It is heavy stuff, but at the same time, it's accessible. Like, I touched on the chapter about this dog.
Mm-hmm.
The sister, like, he also is a cancer survivor and had, like, a really pretty unbelievable brain cancer survival story. He has two twin daughters. Like, there's a lot of humanity in the book.
There's lightheartedness and playfulness. He's funny. In it as well. Yeah, he's very funny.
But I think it's a really, I think it's worth the read. I just was constantly struck down. I mean, this was very hard for me to choose a passage that I liked, because I truly think I underlined a passage.
I actually, in preparation for this, went through and typed out all of the passages that I had underlined, and it's like a 10-page Word document.
Right, right. So you came a little more prepared than I.
No, I mean, different styles, you know, for...
Yeah. Yeah. I love that.
I just think it's the type of book that I would encourage people to not get intimidated and to just
give
it a try.
Don't be intimidated. Don't be intimidated.
Because I was intimidated. I was a bit intimidated at certain parts, but yeah, I thought it was really good. And I definitely have still been thinking about it now, like a month after having finished it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
I love it. It's very life-affirming, I think.
Yeah.
Very life-affirming.
Anyone specific that you would recommend the book for? I think it would be probably a pretty intense experience for someone who was grieving.
Yes. I think someone who was grieving, this would be an intense experience.
And healing as well. He talks a lot about grief.
I think. And aren't we all healing?
Yeah.
All the time.
From our bullets inside of us.
Right. From the bullets.
The festering bullets.
Each of us carry unnoticed. But yeah, I would say I would recommend it to anyone who kind of wants to like expand their thoughts on despair. And it's made me a lot more mindful, like in moments when I'm not to say I'm despairing, but in moments where I'm bored or annoyed, like I try and recognize, you know, you can't have one without the other. So mm-hmm. you can't have the joy without the despair. So anyways, I'm grateful that we chose this.
Agreed. I also think great for anyone who like wants to read more poetry.
Yes.
And is interested.
It's sort of like hiding the vegetables in the pasta sauce.
Yes. That's very true.
The poems in this book are hidden and he talks you through them. He helps you.
Yeah. That was one of the passages. That. Now we need to stop and move on. But one of my favorite sections also was a Gwendolyn Brooks poem that he like really dove into. That was, let me just, so that if people read this, they'll know what section I'm talking about quickly. But I thought it was a great example of a time when he like quotes it, includes the entire poem, and then he really dives into it and like analyzes it kind of like you would in an English literature class. It's entry 11, Professor of the Practice of Religion and Literature, which I guess makes sense that that's what the section is called.
Right.
Because he really enters like professorial mode
right.
and analyzes his poem. And it was a really good a good instance of an example of that, where he kind of holds your hand through it.
It's wonderful.
Okay, shall we?
I think so.
In summary, again, to re-summarize, we both really loved this book. Highly recommend it. And would love to talk to anyone else who decides to pick it up.
Please reach out.
Yeah.
You too can walk around the streets of New York feeling like
a philosopher.
A philosopher.
And a poet.
And a poet.
Yeah.
Wrapped into one.
Exactly. Awesome. And now I think this is where, ordinarily, down the line, we will have our ads, our sponsored content, which we don't yet have.
This is when they're going to pay us to talk. But in the meantime, I kind of dreamed up a little segment that's going to be ads that we make up. So sort of putting on my advertising hat for this one. This show is sponsored by Pork Chops Pounded Really Thin. This is a wonderful organization. I love Pork Chops Pounded Really Thin. I want to recommend to every single listener, go to the butcher, get a pork chop deboned, have them pound it really thin. You put it in a frying pan, you season it, and you eat it with a nice spring salad and couscous.
Talk to us about the seasonings that you're using.
I really, you know, pour the whole shelf on it. I put all sorts of seasonings. Italian seasoning, red pepper flakes, salt, pepper.
You love to put red pepper flakes on your meat.
I put a lot of red pepper flakes. Kind of unique. Yeah, I douse things in red pepper flakes.
It's very good.
I'm not going to urge everyone to do the same. People have differing levels of spiciness abilities. It's nicer to cook than chicken. I know. I don't love cooking chicken. I'm gonna be honest with you about that. I do it all the time because I like to eat chicken. the experience of cooking it, I don't love.
I think a lot of people would agree.
And
with
I
you.
Think I know I'm not alone in that. So a pork chop, if I could just urge the listeners to give it a try, is very clean. It's delicious. I mean, in its raw form. Sorry.
Are you eating raw pork?
Excuse me.
Do we need to take you to the doctor?
I'm sorry. I spoke too freely. No. It is what I more mean to say is, for people who don't like raw chicken, you're going to love raw pork. And when you season it up and you put it in the frying pan with oil, and again, I want to urge you, buy every herb that's in the grocery store, chop it up, bib lettuce, olive oil, vinegar, salt and pepper. Delicious.
Yum.
So the kind people over at Pork Chop Pounded Thin,
we love them.
We love those guys.
Think of us when you eat your
pork
chop pounded thin. I also will just kind of not to step on your toes, but you don't have to ask the butcher to pound it for you. You can also pound yourself if you're so inclined.
Herein lies the difference between Eve and I. Eve pounds her own meat.
That sounds really strange.
I don't. I have the butcher do that dirty work for me.
Okay. Thank you, Pork Chop Pounded Really Thin, for sponsoring this episode.
They are
red.
Yeah.
We're going to move on now.
We're going to move on.
Okay, great. In closing, I think, shall we move on? We wanted to kind of do another little segment will be kind of quick recommendations from us.
Yes.
About what we are currently reading. So obviously we read Zero at the Bone together, but we've moved on to other things. And so why don't I go first?
Please.
I want to share that I am currently reading and have been reading for some time. I'm moving slowly through it. The Complete Chronicles of Narnia.
Oh my.
As a bedtime story to myself.
You've been keeping that sort of a secret.
I have, because I've been planning to write about it.
Oh.
And
so
I haven't really been talking about it. This is a bit of a sneak peek. It will come into my writing on something Eve read at some point.
Fantastic blog.
Thank you again. But I've been reading it to myself before bed. And just working my way through it, I have an edition that has all of them collected into one book, and it's really good.
Wow.
I'm not a huge, like, YA, young adult person. I mean, I'm not, but that's just not my go-to. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if the Chronicles of Narnia would fall into that category, if it would be like more of a younger children's book technically, but the writing is really good and the story is really good. I'm personally a huge fan of like all of the Christian allegory. I find it super interesting.
Yeah.
And also I just remember when we were little going to see the movie The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Yeah.
And coming out of that movie and being like devastated that I didn't live in that world.
Yes.
And so it's nostalgic for me in that sense, even though I don't remember actually reading.
No, I don't know that we did.
The books.
It might have been read to us.
It's not really in my memory, but I've been reading them to myself. It's really nice before bed, to your point about trying to read Zero at the Bone before bed. Mm. Reading something like The Chronicles of Narnia before bed is easier,
a little more palatable,
gentler, and I mean, it's thought provoking, but you don't have to have your brain fully turned on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I highly recommend that. Read yourself a bedtime story, whether it's The Chronicles of Narnia or something else. Like pick out a book that's a little bit lighter and make that your bedtime story.
I love that.
Yeah. What are you currently reading? Well, Goodnight Moon might be a little overly simplistic, but to each their own.
To each their own. I'm currently reading a book called Ordinary Human Failings by Megan Nolan. I actually just finished it last night. It slapped. It was so good. So good. I really could not put it down. Let me tell you, it was not light. It was not light. The subject matter was not happy.
Dark.
It was dark. It was dark. It was about the murder of a child by another child.
Wow.
And that, I don't think I'm spoiling anything. That is pretty early on disclosed. And then it goes through the after effects, the aftershocks of that event.
That sounds really intense.
And it's just, it's not that I loved the subject matter. It was very difficult to read, but the writing was like whip sharp, if that's a saying, if you permit me to say it.
Yeah, whip, totally.
Like a whippersnapper.
Is that I think whips sharp.
Whip smart.
I don't know.
It was
sharp.
It cut to the bone.
Mm-hmm.
It was very fast reading. Like, you know, it just, you sort of sped through it and you wanted to learn more. There was lots of things left unsaid. And it was, I thought, masterfully done. And I am truly obsessed with Irish, Scottish, British writers.
Is the author?
I want to say, I'm going to guess she's Irish because this book is set between kind of Ireland and England.
Cool.
In both places. But
what would you like compare it to? So people have a point of reference. Like if someone likes X writer, they might enjoy this, or X genre of writing.
Mystery, I think you would like true crime.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, it's a fictional tale, but it's
kind of in that style.
Very investigative, reporterly. There's a lot of focus on the reporters who who are covering the situation, and like the tabloids, and it's a little bit of a commentary on the media, a little bit of a commentary on, you know, parenthood and other such.
Cool.
You know,
do you think I would like it?
I think you would. I found it to be quite good.
I'll have to add it to my list.
Yeah, definitely add it to your list.
Awesome.
Okay.
And now we're gonna answer a listener question.
Exciting.
This one, to be fully transparent with you guys, we made it up ourselves. Because this is the first episode.
Yeah, we had to make this up.
But I think if there were a reader that sent this in, we would be super jazzed.
Yeah.
To answer it.
And it would be, we would be freaking the frick out.
So our question for this week is, we wrote it out someone sent it to us. So let's just stick with it, whatever.
Right.
I want to start reading poetry, but I'm not sure where to start. Do you have any recommendations for an entry point into reading more poetry?
I love the person that sent this in.
I want anyone and everyone who wants to read more poetry to read more poetry.
Agreed. Such a good such a good thing.
It's just good for the soul.
Good for the soul. Good for the soul.
And another great example of something that people are intimidated by that they absolutely should not be.
Yeah. Read it. See how it makes you feel.
Let it wash over your body.
Expand your mind. So I'm going to answer this one first. Really hard for me to choose. I'm going to go with two poets because I can't choose. So the first one I would say is Billy Collins. He is a prolific poet. He has multiple volumes of poetry. He is, I think, one of the most readable poets out there. Very funny, very moving. I had for years, honestly, I want to say like 4 years, one of his poems as the background on my phone. So,
which one?
The Breather.
Nice. Oh yeah, I remember.
Are you familiar
that.
With it?
Yeah.
Unbelievable poem.
I actually haven't really read much Billy Collins.
Maybe I'll read it later on another episode. But yeah. Gosh, it's a good poem.
My golly.
My gosh. So yeah, he, I think, is like anyone who likes poetry and anyone who doesn't will like Billy Collins. He is, I think, impossible not to like. And I never am intimidated while reading his books. Like they're very much accessible and readable. Like on a readability scale, I'm going to give him a 10 out of 10. Mm-hmm. In fact, the next one is Sharon Olds, who is my all time favorite poet. I also think she's pretty readable, a little more.
She's a little cerebral.
More figurative.
Yeah.
But language she kind of changed the game. She wrote like confessional poetry. And I think is known as kind of a pioneer in that field of confessional poetry. And she wrote, hands down, the best book of poetry I've ever read called Stag's Leap, that is about the ending of her marriage. I actually have about 10 copies and I send it to people who go through breakups because I think it is so moving, so well written. It will blow your mind.
Amazing.
She writes wonderfully about her parents and her sister. She has a really good poem about her sister that
love,
you know, is really nice.
I think you've sent that one to me before.
Yeah, definitely.
My answer, sorry, are you done?
I'm done.
My answer is, I think, one arguably Catherine says Billy Collins is the best entry point. I think this poet is the best poet to start reading poetry more, and he also happens to be probably my all-time favorite poet.
You've combined them.
It's one and the same.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Robert Frost.
Yes.
I love Robert Frost. I think that he is so talented. Like, I just think there's so much depth and there's such a wealth of meaning in every single one of his poems, but they're also super accessible, really easy to read. You understand what's going on. And I think this is something that is frequently said about Robert Frost, but his poems operate on two levels. One that is kind of more surface level, like, oh, I'm reading a poem about mm-hmm. the falling of the leaves.
Right.
Two roads diverged, right?
In a yellow wood.
In a yellow wood. And you can enjoy the poem on that level. And it's super well done. And it's kind of he writes a lot about nature in New England in particular. And that, on that level alone, the poems are just worth their weight in gold. Or more, because they don't actually weigh that much.
Yeah.
But if you read deeper, there's a lot more to get out of each of his poems beyond that. And so yeah. I think he's the type of poet that you can read over and over and over again, and you find something new every time you read him. So, and my favorite poem of all time, The Silken Tent,
yes.
is by Robert Frost.
Yes.
Check it out. I love that one.
Beautiful. Well done.
I think that covers today's episode. First episode down. I think so.
Well, we don't we want to share
we're
what
just
book?
Yeah, we're gonna do our closing remarks, but I think we can kind of reflect.
Let's
how do
reflect.
You feel?
This is very exciting.
I'm so glad that you talked me into this. I feel like I was born to do it.
Yeah, you were born to do it. You were born to do this.
We're gonna be stars.
I'm feeling really good. I, you know, talking to you is one of my favorite things to do.
Ditto.
So it's just nice to be able to sit here and chat.
Chat
really books.
Nice.
Chat reading.
Totally agree.
And I, you know, it's only up from here.
Hell yeah.
It's just going to get better and better.
It really is. And speaking of that, let's share with the people what we're going to read next so that people can read along with us.
Yes. Go get this book.
Know what we're talking about next month. And it's not just us trying to explain a book. We can kind of all be in it together.
In it together.
This book was recommended to me. We actually both, I think, separately found this book.
We do.
And it's been on our shelves for a while. I found it at Three Lives.
Oh, how funny. So did I.
I assume where you found it as well.
Jinx.
It was in their staff picks section, I think.
Yes.
And it's an Irish author. And as Catherine said, she loves Irish writers.
Obsessed.
I also really love Irish writers. I think there's the way that they use
language
is just
very, very beautifully.
But this is by John McGahern. We're
probably
not butchering that.
We'll find out before the next episode.
So sorry if that's not how you pronounce it.
John McGahern.
We should have looked it up first.
Forgive
us. And
it's
called By the Lake. And I'll read the blurb.
Oh, yeah.
I usually am anti-blurb, but I feel like for these purposes...
Read the blurb. Blurb it out.
So, with this magnificently assured new novel, John McGahern, again, reveals why he has been called the Irish Chekhov, as he guides us into a village in rural Ireland and deftly, compassionately traces its natural rhythms and the inner lives of its people. Here are the Rutledges, who have forsaken the glitter of London to raise sheep and cattle. Gentle Jamesy Murphy, whose appetite for gossip both charms and intimidates his neighbors. Handsome John Quinn, perennially on the lookout for a new wife. And the town's richest man, a gruff, self-made magnate known as the Shaw. Following his characters through the course of a year, through lambing and haying seasons, market days, and family visits, McGahern, lays bare their passions and regrets, their uneasy relationship with the modern world, and their ancient intimacy with death.
Ooh! That sounds
really
good.
It's going to be really good.
That sounds good.
So we're really super excited for that.
Yeah. So
and I hope you guys are too.
Tune in next month.
Something a little bit different from this.
Yeah.
This month was kind
a
collection
novel.
Of essays and poems, and this will be a more standard novel. So we're excited for that. And I would say that's the majority of what we both read.
Right. Yeah.
Novels. I guess that's not really accurate.
No,
you read a lot of
it's
poetry.
It's fair.
Short stories too, but.
I think it's fair to say.
Yeah. So that's that. And then every month at the end of the episode, kind of once we've done the wrap up, which we just did, we are going to pick a poem. This month, Catherine will be sharing a poem. And so we'll close with that and send you off into your day and into your week with a poem to go.
Yes.
So, Catherine, take it away.
Here I go. So I got this poem. I have to do a brief plug for Maya C. Papa's.
I love
Substack, which is called
Poetry Today.
And she does this thing
every
Friday.
Also a great entry point. To
yes,
reading poetry.
Yes. She does this thing, so I recommend subscribing to her Substack. And she sends out poems for your weekend every Friday.
Good.
I love it. And this was one of the poems for the weekend. And here we are on Sunday.
Yeah.
And I'm
at time of record.
Right. At time of record, of course.
But
and I'm going to read one of the ones that she suggested for this weekend.
Have you gotten a copy of her new book?
Wound is the Origin of Wonder.
Yeah.
I've read it.
Oh, you have?
Oh, I love it.
Oh, I need to read it.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Okay, great.
And what is a better sentence than that?
Oh, my God. It's so good.
Wound is the Origin of Wonder.
It's so good. I'm also such an etymology nerd that I just love that.
Murder me with that. That is literally so good.
Okay.
So good. Okay.
Let's get into the poem. This is not by Maya, but she shared it. Correct?
No, this is by Ada Limón.
Oh, I love Ada Limón.
So, I'm going to begin. I'm going to just go straight. Let me begin.
Begin.
Okay. What I didn't know before was how horses simply give birth to other horses. Not a baby by any means, not a creature of liminal spaces, but already a four-legged beast hell-bent on walking. Scrambling after the mother. A horse gives way to another horse, and then suddenly there are two horses, just like that. That's how I loved you. You off the long train from Red Bank, carrying a coffee as big as your arm, a bag with two computers swinging in it unwieldily at your side. I remember we broke into laughter when we saw each other. What was between us wasn't a fragile thing to be coddled, cooed over. It came out fully formed, ready to run.
Wow. That's a really good one.
You loved it.
Thank you for sharing.
And sort of that's how this podcast came out.
Yes.
Fully formed.
Beautiful.
Ready to run.
Well, thank you guys. Oh, sorry.
It's a beautiful poem, though.
So beautiful. Yeah. I really love that one. Thanks. Great choice.
Well, thank you guys for listening.
We're so glad.
We're really honored here to have you listen to us, and we look forward to this journey. Happy reading.
Happy reading.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye.